Today's episode of Vital Voices is brought to you by Oak Tree Medical Center and King Group of Companies, including Cool Runnings Ice, Color Me Agency, and Retro Games 242.
Welcome to Vital Voices, the podcast where we amplify the stories, insights, and expertise of the people shaping the future of our communities, our conversations, and our country. I'm your host, Alexis Burrows. Thank you for joining us each week for the nation's most vital conversations, where insight meets impact. Today, we are happy to be joined by Dr. Mikhail Higgins, who is an interventional radiologist and the founder of Bahamas Fibroid Interventional Clinic. If you or someone you love has struggled with fibroids and wondered what it could mean for your fertility, this episode is definitely for you. We're diving deep into the science, the strategy, and the stories behind fertility after fibroids. From lifestyle shifts and herbal insights to cutting-edge procedures and real success stories, Dr. Higgins is here to help us reframe the future of reproductive health. So let's get into it. Welcome to the show, Dr. Higgins.
Thank you, Alexis. Appreciate you having me.
We are happy to have you on. This is a conversation that is near and dear to my heart, given some of, you know, the journey that my wife and I have had over the course of the years dealing with issues like fibroids, going through surgical procedures, having concerns about, you know, what does fertility look like coming out on the other side. So this is a conversation that for us is very near and dear to our hearts. But, you know, for our wider audience, you know, we kind of want to start from the ability to break down, you know, this whole understanding of what fibroids are. You know, why does it seem that they disproportionately affect Black women? I know it's something that we see a high incidence rate of in our country. And, you know, you can feel free to touch on, you know, genetic components, environmental, lifestyle contributions. But what are fibroids and why are they so prevalent amongst our people?
So, again, beautiful question. And again, thank you for having me. And I'm excited to support and educate your community. Mm-hmm. So what are fibroids? So fibroids are benign muscular tumors that occur in and throughout the uterus. Mm-hmm. Okay. I always say benign, and I want to break that down. So when people hear cancer, mm-hmm. cancer is an uncontrolled growth of cells that spreads out of the organ of interest. Mm-hmm. Breast cancer, tumor, begins to grow uncontrolled, spreads outside the breast. Lung cancer, tumor grows uncontrollably, spreads outside. Mm-hmm. Benign tumors, they will grow and grow and grow and grow, but they don't depart from mm-hmm. the organ in which they essentially were conceived. In case of fibroids, they grow and they grow and grow, and they wreak havoc, but in their space, in mm-hmm. the uterus, in the womb. Okay, so it's very important. And so I want to make sure to discriminate that point first and foremost. The second thing is, well, why do they develop? And this is probably the most common question that I get. So fibroids grow because of all of the factors that you mentioned, but primarily because of a genetic predisposition, mm-hmm. okay? We have our genes, and on those genes, there are specific loci or parts of the gene structure mm-hmm. that will actually predispose a woman to developing fibroids. And we have identified what some of those loci are. Mm-hmm. Whether Black women have more of those genetic loci than white women, that is, the verdict is out on that.
Okay.
However, this is where the hormonal and the environmental and lifestyle factors come into play that mm-hmm. help us to explain perhaps why Black women are predisposed more. So let's just talk about sort of the epidemiology in terms of what the rates are. If you have a Black woman that is presenting in life, she is going to have a 25% chance of developing fibroids by the age of 30. So one in four women who are Black by the age of 30. Okay. By the age of 50, that same group of Black women that have gone on, that percentage jumps to 80%. Okay, wow. So 8 out of every 10 women. Now, what people don't know is white women are not so far off. The number is between 60 and 70% of white women by the age mm-hmm. of 50 would develop at least one fibroid during those reproductive years. Mm-hmm. Okay, now when it comes to Black women, let's talk about sort of maybe some of the risk factors that may throw more points in the Black women's category and why they may be predisposed. So what is fertilizer for fibroids? So estrogen and progesterone, people know these are sort of the female hormones. Mm-hmm. These are hormones that sort of peak and trough and spike and fall throughout the course of a menstrual cycle. We know that these particular hormones are like fertilizer for fibroids. The higher their levels are in a given woman, the more the fibroids are going to grow and the worse the menstrual and the bulk symptoms are going to be. Mm-hmm. Black women tend to have periods, what we call sort of menarche which is basically the first period at a younger age than white women. Mm-hmm. They tend to have exposure, obviously a longer duration of the menstrual cycle because it's occurring early in life mm-hmm. than white women. And so their exposure to progesterone and estrogen is going to be more.
Right.
Okay. So they typically are going to develop fibroids at a younger age than white women, possibly because of that exposure. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Number two is, interestingly, vitamin D deficiency. You say, well, vitamin D, how did vitamins get into this? Well, vitamin D, you know, people know it as sort of being a vitamin that helps with sort of calcium absorption and regulation. Mm-hmm. But interestingly enough, it's also a vitamin that actually aids in hormonal regulation. It's a vitamin that actually aids in providing an anti-inflammatory sort of effect within the body. Mm-hmm. But it also reduces the growth of fibroids. It also can result in something called apoptosis, which is cell death. It's for bad cells. Mm-hmm. So bad cells which basically get a signal to just almost commit suicide, mm-hmm. which is a good thing. We don't want those cells. We want themselves to just eradicate themselves.
Right.
Black women typically have severe vitamin D deficiency. And you say, well, why is that? Well, what do we have that white women don't have? We have higher levels of melanin. Mm-hmm. Melanin is good from a sunscreen standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. Which is why we have lower rates of skin cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But a black woman has to be in the sun longer to absorb UV light than a white woman.
Oh.
Longer amounts of duration to get UV exposure, right, and absorption. UV is necessary for vitamin D absorption.
Mm-hmm.
If vitamin D absorption is decreased, then obviously the levels of vitamin D in the body are going to decrease.
Right. Okay?
So the vitamin D deficiency and is going to result in, obviously, instead of having the retarding, inhibiting sort of fibroid growth, which would normally be afforded by the vitamin D, that is obviously not present.
Mm.
The apoptosis, the cell death from normal cells in the fibroid cells that would normally result in vitamin D is not present because of vitamin D deficiency. So if you're on two factors now. Obesity rates are higher amongst black women than mm-hmm. they are amongst white women. Now, estrogen is secreted from four main sites in the body. The first site is our reproductive organs, which are called ovaries, mm-hmm. little eggs, little areas that release the follicles, which are eggs every month in the form of ovulation. That's number one. Number two are the adrenal glands, which are the glands that sit atop of the kidney and release cortisol, which is the stress hormone,
mm-hmm.
which releases adrenaline, which is the fight or flight hormone, but it also releases what? Estrogen. So there's two sites,
mm-hmm.
ovaries, adrenal glands. The third site, which is going to be a site people will be like, oh, this is pretty ironic, is the placenta. When the placenta forms during pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
the placenta is that sort of essentially powerhouse for the baby because it's attached to the mom, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Placenta is responsible for surges in estrogen during pregnancy, which is why many women say, I didn't know I had fibroids until I got pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, okay, it's because of that surge in estrogen. And some of those fibroids that grow during pregnancy may actually slow grow after pregnancy to the mm-hmm. point where the issues they cause you during pregnancy may not be present.
Mm-hmm.
It's three sites. So we have ovaries, we have adrenal glands, we have placenta.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth site, nobody talks about it, it's because mum is the word. Are fat cells, adipose tissue, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine the more adipose tissue one has, male or female,
mm-hmm.
male or female, the higher the rates of estrogen, okay? So if black women tend to have more obesity, more adipose tissue, then you're going to say, oh, well, the estrogen levels are going to be higher, more fertilizer for the fibroids.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take that even a step further now. What is the nutritional lifestyle of a woman that ends up obese? It's probably eating things that are what? Red meats,
mm-hmm.
eating things that are probably lower vegetables, probably maybe consuming alcohol, maybe drinking beer, all things that scientifically have been proven, red meat, alcohol,
mm-hmm.
low leafy greens, low vegetables,
mm-hmm.
to actually increase the disposition for fibroid growth.
Right.
You think about, exercise. Exercise actually has a protective effect. If you have two women, one has a lifestyle where they both have a lifestyle where they eat the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The woman who has an exercise practice, her fibroids will actually grow at a much lower rate and actually slow down in comparison to the exact same woman with the same nutritional. They could be sisters,
mm-hmm.
they could be twins, but her exercise will actually have a protective effect. Mm-hmm. So again, obesity is not just the obesity with the estrogen. It's the obesity in terms of what did you get to become obese?
Right.
Red meat, the processed foods. Now we'll take it a step further. Now the and again, there's so many, but we'll end with this one. What we know is that women that use relaxers in their hair, mm-hmm. those relaxers in your hair tend to create a pro-inflammatory environment in your body that predisposes to fibroids. So if you were to Google relaxers, you think about, and I won't call the names of these companies, you Google these companies, many of these companies have products, chemicals, like parabens and phthalates and others mm-hmm. that are specific, what we call endocrine disruptors, that are going to create a hormonal environment that is beautiful for fibroid growth. Okay? Wow. And right now, there's currently lawsuits against these companies in places like Atlanta and DC, where obviously are hubs mm-hmm. for women of color, mm-hmm. black women, because they now know, because of research, that because of the substances that they've been putting in there from the age of 8, relaxing their hair, have actually created an environment chemically mm-hmm. that is actually beautiful, pro-fibrotic in the case of fibroid. So those are some of the hormonal, genetic, and environmental factors that increase the risk for fibroids amongst black women as opposed to other ethnicities.
You know, it's interesting. It explains why, you know, nowadays when you look at like shampoos and hair products and things like that, you'll always see it says no parabens, no phthalates. And I guess perhaps these lawsuits are part of the reason why people are now moving to that space of being, they're making their products differently or identifying that the products are made differently.
Right.
But those are, it's a lot of factors that add up together to explain why, or potentially why black women would be more at risk than their white counterparts. Mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, because of experiences, I've come to learn about some of the different types, but can you walk us through what some of the different types of fibroids are, like, you know, submucosal, intramural, pedunculated, and any differences in how the difference in the type of fibroid may affect the woman, and particularly her fertility?
Yeah, so great question, Alexis. So fibroids are kind of known based on their location. Okay. So if you imagine a hot air balloon, again, this is a sort of a virtual audience that's sort of listening to us. So they can't really see me kind of doing the little dance over here, you know, the charades dance. So if you imagine my body as a sort of hot air balloon, mm-hmm. That hot air balloon is sort of the womb, okay? Mm-hmm. And so the womb, which is the hot air balloon, is, imagine if I was to put my arms on either side of that hot air balloon, that would be the oviduct, so the fallopian tubes.
Okay.
And my fingers extending from the hot air balloon would be what we call the fimbria, which basically houses the ovaries. And again, within the ovaries, little eggs, the follicles that get released, and they come down the fallopian tube into the hot air balloon, which is obviously the uterus, in preparation for a nice friendly sperm that's going to make it stay and turn it into a baby. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the fibroids that occur within the lining of the womb, the inner lining that sloughs off and thickens, all right, over the course of the month in the form of a period, is the endometrium. Mm-hmm. Just within the endometrium, fibroids that stick into the cavity are what we call intracavitary. Okay? Okay. Fibroids that are sort of buried like a marble into the carpet. If you see a little pooching out of the carpet, you say, oh, that's a marble underneath it. Okay, mm-hmm. That would be what we call a submucosal fibroid because it's just underneath it, but it can actually cause a little lumpy, bumpy feel where, again, if you have a marble in the carpet, you rub your foot on it, or you say, okay, there's a marble underneath it. Nobody has to tell you that. You can feel it, okay? Right. So that is submucosal, just deep to the endometrium. Now, if you have fibroids that are in the wall, you don't even know they're in the wall, mm-hmm. okay? Because you can't see it if you are in the hot air balloon. That would be intramural,
okay?
Vast majority of fibroids tend to be intramural, okay? Fibroids that now extend outer, we're going from the inside of the hot air balloon, outside, okay? Now, underneath that skin of the uterus, which would be sort of that sort of tarp of the hot air balloon, mm-hmm. just underneath that, we would call them subserosal. Serosa is the skin of the uterus. Mm-hmm. Subserosal, sub underneath those layers. Now, if a fibroid says, man, look here, I gone, man, and it creates a stalk out from the skin, okay, outside, and it's almost like somebody just pushed their hand through the hot air balloon mm-hmm. and their fist through it, and then they have like coconut hanging out over it, that would basically be a pedunculated fibroid. Mm-hmm. So let's get to the second part of your question, which is how would the various locations affect conception, fertility, all of the above. Mm-hmm. Now, let's sort of get into what are the optimal stages in order for one to become pregnant and to give birth. Now, first thing you need is viable sperm, okay? Mm-hmm. The second thing you need are viable eggs, okay? The third thing you need is a way for that viable egg in the form of ovulation to come down from, again, my little fingers extending from that hot air balloon, mm-hmm. down the fallopian tube, the oviduct, and then into the uterus. If anything is blocking my arm, which is the tube, the oviduct, mm-hmm. the fallopian tube, then no go.
It can't pass.
It can't pass, right? It's a roadblock. Mm-hmm. You can't get to where you're going. So fibroids can go subseroso and push and kink the oviduct. Mm-hmm. And so then you go and you do a test, like what we call an HSG, hysterosalpingogram, and you find out that the dye that the radiologist is injecting in your vagina, into your cervix, into your oviduct is not filling because there's a kink. Mm-hmm. There's an external kink. Okay? Right. That's number one. So mm-hmm. we can't get down. Now, after that, if say there's no kink in the oviduct, no kink in the fallopian tube, it gets into the uterus now. Now the question is, can sperm actually get past the cervix and into the uterus? Because mm-hmm. they gotta make contact. So the rendezvous is successful in the part of the egg getting in the uterus. Right. Can the sperm rendezvous with the egg? There may be a fibroid that's actually overlying the cervix, that's intracavitary, that's preventing the sperm from actually connecting with the egg. Mm-hmm. Okay? So provided, again, this is all well and good, no intracavitary fibroid that's preventing the sperm from getting up, no subserosal or intramural fibroid that's preventing the egg in the form of ovulation from getting down. Mm-hmm. So now we say, okay, rendezvous, sperm, egg, you guys talk, you guys conceive. Conception has occurred. What happens next? What happens next is now that embryo has to now bury into the endometrium mm-hmm. and start to grow. Now, what can go wrong? What can go wrong is the following. Those little marbles under the carpet, right? They are exactly what I said, marbles under the carpet. Marbles aren't like cherries that if I put my foot on the carpet, you can hurt your foot. If you step on the marble, it can hurt your foot now, mm-hmm. right? These embryos are very impressionable, very soft. So mm-hmm. as these embryos grow, if they bump into marble under the carpet, i.e. another fibroid can look at that embryo and say, bro, where you come from trying to expand and take up space?
Thou shalt not pass.
And they can say, stay small. Mm-hmm. And what will happen? A miscarriage.
Yeah.
And that will continue to happen. And what? And what's worse, it's going to get, the miscarriage is going to become more and more frequent mm-hmm. because meanwhile, you are trying and trying to conceive, and the fibroids are getting bigger right. and bigger and bigger. So that marble is not the same size in November, okay, as it was in June. Mm-hmm. It won't be the same size in February as it was in November. It'll continue to expand, expand, expand. So your chances, we know that the rate of pregnancy complications in all comers, all women with fibroids, is 40%. Mm-hmm. So they will have complications that range from miscarriages. Mm-hmm. And if they get past to the point now where they actually can have that implantation and that gestation where the embryo is now growing, they can have preterm labor before 37 weeks. Now, that obviously causes complications. They can have, if they get past that issue, they can have what we call a breech position where the baby can't turn mm-hmm. because, again, all the fibroids are taking up space and the fibroids are continuing to grow because the placenta is giving estrogen to them and making them grow.
Right.
So it's a competitive environment for the baby to be. Then now you have forced cesarean section where they have to do a cesarean section because now the fibroids have grown to the point now where they're blocking the cervix and you can't have vaginal delivery. Or you may have the worst complication once you get past the risk of miscarriage is now an abruption of the placenta, which is now the placenta, which gives the baby, obviously, the life sort of enriching oxygen that it needs and nutrients from the mom. Mm-hmm. It just basically like Velcro, it just sort of peels off. And now the woman, the mother, has life-threatening hemorrhage. And the child also is at risk for dying, okay? Wow. So these are the issues that we talk about when we walk one through mm-hmm. the stages of fertility, mm-hmm. all right, that can be compromised or attacked or sabotaged by fibroids.
Right. Wow. Great breakdown of the different stages and how the different types of fibroids can affect that.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI at Top of the Hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 242-321-145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring. Compassionate. Complete.
Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, Top of the Hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring, compassionate, complete.
Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 242-8164-OPP, 4667, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Primary Plus, where your health comes first.
Elevate your event with King Group of Companies, your go-to for seamless innovation in rentals, entertainment, and digital solutions across the Bahamas. Stay frosty with Cool Runnings Ice, available at Solomon's Food Stores, Island Connect Studio, or delivered straight to your doorstep. Transform your space with Color Me Agency, stunning balloon garlands, luxe backdrops, red carpet moments, marquee light-ups, and more. Bring the fun with Retro Games 242, classic arcade games, board games, and vintage favorites for every occasion. Upgrade your bar and restaurant with our NFC digital menus, seamless ordering at your fingertips. Capture every memory with our photo booth rentals, aerial 360, magazine booth, and floor 360 experiences that make every celebration unforgettable. King Group of Companies, where creativity meets innovation. Follow us on social media or contact us at 804-5262 today to bring your vision to life.
Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
I know one of the things, and, you know, talking with a number of different people and hearing people's stories and experiences over the years, I think one of the big concerns that women often have with fibroids is this thing that it comes back. You know, you've had a lot of women who are, you know, I had surgery and then a year later, they're back. How common is recurrence, and are there strategies that women can take to reduce the chances of fibroids returning?
Great question, Alexis. So I'll answer it two ways. The first answer is based on the method that you use to treat it. Mm-hmm. Okay, every method that you use to treat it is going to have a recurrence rate that matches that method. Okay, and then the second part of that question is, if you've been doing what you've always done, you'll get what you always got.
Fair.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So let's start with the first step. Okay? So there are really four main opportunities for treatment here in the Bahamas and the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. Okay? The first way is a hysterectomy. A hysterectomy is basically what I call throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
You say, I have fibroids. I will no longer suffer in silence anymore. It is now, you get a caesarean section scar where they go in and they basically take the entire uterus, all the fibers that are present, and they just dump it in the garbage, okay? Mm-hmm. So great thing for you is that you no longer have a risk of fibroids, so your recurrence rate is zero, mm-hmm. okay? Bad thing for you is that if fertility was a concern for you, you won't be able to be fertile anymore.
Right.
It's almost like you saying, I don't want weeds in my garden. And you say, all right, I'm going to put cement over my garden, mm-hmm. which... yes, great, no more weeds, but also no more flowers, ever, right. ever again, okay? The third thing when you think about a hysterectomy is that hysterectomy is a cause for many unknown complications that women don't really talk about. Mm-hmm. If you were to Google incontinence, which is basically uncontrolled ability to urinate, okay, and you look up diapers, you'll see a beautiful black woman on the cover. That's changed over the last 20 years because now they've relied in centers in, particularly in the U.S., mm-hmm. where there are high incidence of hysterectomies. The most common reason that you lose your uterus in the U.S. is fibroids. And again, what we know is that Black women in the U.S. are actually offered, even though the number is 80% for Black women risk versus 60 to 70% white women, Black women are offered hysterectomies at a rate that's 2.5 times to 5 times more than their white counterparts.
Wow.
Which makes this what? A health disparity.
Mm-hmm.
We know that this is a concern. And with that concern and that journey to eradicate oneself of your fibroids, they're now picking up another complication that can't be treated, which is incontinence,
mm-hmm.
post-surgical incontinence. Okay, so that's the issue with hysterectomies generally. Number two is what we call an open myomectomy. An open myomectomy is where a surgeon does the same type of scar for hysterectomy.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're trying to do is they're trying to do what we call uterine preservation. Mm-hmm. They preserve the presence of the uterus, unlike the hysterectomy, and they're trying to remove each individual fibroid. The great thing about it is that they have the woman entirely open up and they're trying to find the individual fibroids. But what's interesting is that in the attempt to preserve the uterus, they may not be able to get all the fibroids.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like if I gave you a Snickers bar and I say, Alexis, do me a favor. I need you to remove all the peanuts from the Snickers bar. You getting ready to smash the whole thing. I say, no, 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 but I need the Snickers to be intact when you give it back to me. You say, no, no, Higgins, that's an impossible task.
Right.
Well, that's what you're asking the surgeon to do. You're asking the surgeon to remove all the peanuts, and you want the caramel, and you want the chocolate and everything. That's an impossible task. So I will take out as many peanuts as I can by remaining, would it look like a little candy bar.
Right.
And I can put them on the side, and I can line them up, and I can show you, yes, I took out 10. Your ultrasound before the surgery said it was 2.
Mm-hmm.
I took out 10. That's a win. But then 3 years later, you say, boy, my fibroids grew back.
Mm-hmm.
No, no, no. Those were fibroids that were already present before. And now when those fibroids, those 10 removed, those spaces where those fibroids live now created space for the smaller fibroids that were a generation earlier and smaller to now grow into that space.
Right?
Because again, it's all space.
Yeah.
It's all space, right?
Almost.
So you now created a Swiss cheese holes for now new fibroids that were present before to fill in the gaps, right? You weren't going to go down and completely cut the womb because you were trying to uterine preserve.
Right.
So the recurrence rate in that can be 15 to 30%,
mm-hmm.
right, within 3 years, okay? So a third of women can have recurrence in about 3 years. The third option is what? Robotic or laparoscopic myomectomy.
Mm-hmm.
This is for women who say, man, the 6 to 12 weeks for that woman with a hysterectomy, the 6 to 12 weeks for that woman with a myomectomy, I can't be off from work all the time.
Right.
I also ain't into this incontinence business. I, as a woman, I want to have my ability to have children. I name woman. Woman is womb. I need to have my womb.
Mm-hmm.
So I need minimal scars. I like the way I look. I want my body to be scar-free. So a robotic and laparoscopic myomectomy appeals to those women. They
mm-hmm.
say, all right, 1 centimeter to 2 centimeter scars, 4 to 6, may say, all right, this would be that. That way that obviously is operated on. So that woman who's operated on robotically or laparoscopically, what they're doing there is they're optimizing for time off from work,
mm-hmm.
1 week to 2 weeks. They're optimizing for the nature of the scars.
Mm-hmm.
Now think about it now. If you have a fibroid that is 6-12 centimeters, how are you going to remove that from a 1-2 centimeter incision? It's really only two options. You don't, or you break it up in the body and you try to remove it.
Mm-hmm.
The chances when you break it up in the body, you try to remove it, is that you may burst the bag that you're trying to pull it through, which has happened in cases. And those little tiny fibroids, once they're in the body, they cannot be removed. Okay? Now, the other thing is you may have to extend the incision from 1 centimeter to a incision that allows you to remove a 5 or 10 centimeter fibroid. So a lot of women are not candidates, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
The second piece is that what we know when you study open myomectomy versus robotic or laparoscopic, the yield of fibroids, pound for pound, woman to woman,
mm-hmm.
is lower with robotic and laparoscopic than it is for open, which makes sense, right? If I'm telling you to remove all the peanuts from a candy bar and I give you chopsticks versus if I give you a fork and knife,
mm-hmm.
you say, give me my fork and knife and let me do a better job. So
right.
that's what most surgeons, even if they have the same capacity of skill set to do robotic and laparoscopic, they are going, if you give them an option, they will tell you, I would prefer to cut you open and do it because I'm going to do a better job.
Right.
Okay? But then you're back to obviously the issues of scarring in 6 to 12 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth option is what I offer, which is called the uterine artery embolization. And this is a procedure that was invented in the early 1970s in France. And this was a procedure that was then validated through clinical trials in France in 1994, 1995. Mm-hmm. And the reason it was developed in France is because of the socialized healthcare system, whereby a lot of women who were getting hysterectomies and myomectomies were not staying in for the standard 5 days post-procedure, post-surgery. They were staying in for weeks at a time. In a socialized healthcare system, if you stay in for weeks at a time, that's more taxpayer money, mm-hmm. right? So the government is more financially minded and more fiscally minded. Mm-hmm. And so what they did is they had meetings, the gynecologist of that day, Dr. Bavaria, and the neuro interventionalist of that day decided that what they would do is they would start a clinical trial where basically the interventionalist would block off the blood supply to the thyroids, which have usually like a spider web type blood supply around it that it uses and hijacks from the uterus, in order to provide that sort of life-giving sort of oxygen to those fibroids, mm-hmm. on which all of the fibers develop on. He said, well, if you go in and you block up the blood supply and you then give the patient to us the following week, then the thought is that if you blocked up all the blood supply, when we go to cut, these women won't have the bleeding complications they've had to date.
Right.
And what started happening is they started seeing that many women didn't show up for the surgery, and they went to interview the women. They found that, hey, actually, not only are they not showing up for the surgery, but they were showing up for the interventional procedure. And I said, well, why are you showing up for one and not the other? Mm-hmm. The reason they were showing up is because afterwards, their interventional procedure, their symptoms were going. And they didn't believe why their symptoms were going. And so they imaged these women. They found that the fibroids shrunk, they died, they were already scarring. And of course, in 1996, this was then introduced in the U.S. And then in 2003 was when Condoleezza Rice, you know, in the midst of an election year, mm-hmm. went in on a Friday, and one of my colleagues, Dr. Jim Smees at Georgetown Medical Center, and everybody thought that she was going to be back in the White House in 3 months, and Dr. Smees had her back to work in the White House the following Monday.
Wow.
And so everybody said, well, what kind of black magic is this, right? And but what the
based
issue...
Based on experience, is that, that's what you were thinking.
Exactly. And here's a woman who could have had any procedure that she wanted in the world by any specialist. And the reason she chose this is because of the obvious fact that what when we do an embolization, if you imagine a spider web, okay, that spider web will have fibroids the size of watermelons on it. It'll have fibroids the size of coconuts on it, fibroids the size of sunflower seeds on it.
Mm-hmm.
When you're doing the surgery, you're going after the coconuts and the watermelons, but you're not going after the sunflower seeds.
Right.
When we kill the entire network dies.
Right.
So yeah. 95 to 96% of women will basically have resolution of the menstrual symptoms. And I always sort of end, you know, when we talk about comparing these methodologies, you know, people always say, well, why do surgeons, you know, tell women who have small fibroids not to that they don't need to treat them?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because when you're doing a surgery, you are weighing risks and benefits. You want to guide your patient. You don't want to do something on them that's going to have risks. And so you say, all right, if you have fibroids the size of grapes, again, they could be submucosal fibroids that could promote infertility, you still say, you know what, actually, this is a small fibroid. Reason being is because if you imagine two bales of hay, one bale of hay to your left, one bale of hay to your right. If I was to bury a golf ball in one and a conch shell in the other one, which one's going to be easier to find?
The conch shell.
Right. You're going to remove more hay, which is so paradoxical, to get to the golf ball.
Right.
So if you're trying to remove small fibroids, that's more blood, that's more tissue. It's more risk.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense for a surgeon to tell a woman, oh, you know, actually, let's just wait. Let's give you contraceptives, oral pills that are going to mask your symptoms, i.e., while your fibroids are growing and taking those hormones and actually getting bigger. Mm-hmm. But you won't know about it because it's almost like putting a muzzle on somebody. You know,
right.
You can't hear the fibroids screaming out symptomatically.
Mm-hmm.
Your body's not telling you that something's wrong because you're changing the hormonal dysregulation to the point whereby your woman, the patient, is not aware that this is happening.
But they're still there.
But they're actually getting bigger during that time.
Mm-hmm.
So the message for women is not to treat fibroids if they're small. It's to find the right treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And to know that regardless of the size, again, marble under the carpet can cause a miscarriage.
Right.
Okay? And so this is sort of the message when we think about sort of these options in terms of weighing one's decisions as they approach fibroids.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI at Top of the Hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 24232 800-228-2145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring. Compassionate. Complete.
Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring, compassionate, complete.
Discover the ultimate in personalized health care with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 242-8164-OPP, 4667, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Primary Plus, where your health comes first.
Elevate your event with King Group of Companies, your go-to for seamless innovation in rentals, entertainment, and digital solutions across the Bahamas. Stay frosty with Cool Runnings Ice, available at Solomon's Food Stores, Island Connect Studio, or delivered straight to your doorstep. Transform your space with Color Me Agency, stunning balloon garlands, luxe backdrops, red carpet moments, marquee light-ups, and more. Bring the fun with Retro Games 242, classic arcade games, board games, and vintage favorites for every occasion. Upgrade your bar and restaurant with our NFC digital menus, seamless ordering at your fingertips. Capture every memory with our photo booth rentals, aerial 360, magazine booth, and floor 360 experiences that make every celebration unforgettable. King Group of Companies, where creativity meets innovation. Follow us on social media or contact us at 804-5262 today to bring your vision to life.
Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
You know, fibroids is something that obviously has a lot of symptoms for women. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you help them navigate whether they need surgery, lifestyle changes, or a combination of both?
Yeah, so anytime a woman presents, again, you know, and this is sort of just, you know, as an extension of our previous conversation, if a woman has fibroids and she has symptoms which could be heavy menstrual periods, painful periods, issues of bloating, mm-hmm. issues of pain on intercourse, increased urinary frequency, urgency, issues of miscarriages, issues of constipation because of fibroids pressing on her rectum, for me, urinary embolization would be, she would be a candidate for, okay, period. Number two is, now, we have a program where, again, you know, and I didn't come back to the second part of the question you asked before, and I apologize, which is that it has to do, recurrence has to do with what you choose, and we went through those four options, mm-hmm. but if you do the same things you've always done, you get the same thing. Got right. That's where the second part of my management comes into play. Once a woman gets treated, they know, within 2 weeks, they should start feeling the resolution of their bloating. I tell mm-hmm. them this, right? So they're out of work for a week. I usually, you know, thanks to my Bahamian women, I give them an extra week off to get their affairs in order, even though they don't really need that extra week. But they, you know, they have historically asked me that second week.
Right.
During Christmas, we happen to maybe give an extra week off, you know, so they could do what they got to do during Christmas time. But it's only 1 week that you need post-procedure.
Right.
Your scar is basically gone within 4 days, right? You don't even mm-hmm. know where it is. Now, once you get to that second week, I tell women they're going to start feeling like an emptiness in their tummy. They'll mm-hmm. be like, wow, you start pushing on your tummy. What used to push back and you ain't pushing back no more, mm-hmm. right? And that's when they know that now they're waiting for the period to come. When the period comes now, they then know, I would say, in probably 3/4 of women, if the period is within that first 2 weeks, they're going to know, yes, definitely, marked change. 7-8 pads in a 24-hour before the procedure, now we're down to 1 pad, you know, maybe 2 pads kind of thing, mm-hmm. okay? It's immediate. Mm-hmm. They may actually be in the quarter that has to get to the second period where they now see it, right? It just has to do with the blood flow and the complexity of
right.
it, right? Now, which is why I see them 4 to 6 weeks. So if they haven't had that change at the first period, then I wait for the second period and then they come see me so we could all celebrate together now, okay? So now when they're off in my office now, what we call as clinical success. The day of the procedure, we call technical success. Mm-hmm. I did what I came to do. I saw it. I showed them. Everything's all blocked off. The second thing is now clinical success. Symptoms are now resolved. The third thing is now imaging success, where they come 6 months later. I show them on the MRI what was happening before procedure. Mm-hmm. I show them the contrast went into the blood vessels. I show them the size of them. Now I show them that the contrast going in fibers. Fibers is now, it's almost like a light bulb before the procedure. Light bulb is now out after the procedure. And now there's now scarring down the fibroid, massively decreased in size. So that's what we call, we hit that technical success, clinical success, imaging. Now when we get in between the 6 months and the 1 year mark for now, mm-hmm. the final visit is now we adopt the lifestyle changes, right? Mm-hmm. So I've cleaned the garden of all the weeds now. Mm-hmm. Now we then put you on a program now, which is now where we talk about the lifestyle changes, right? Right. Now you meet my nutritionist. Now we start talking about lifestyle changes. Now we discuss the physical training, the mm-hmm. cardiovascular fitness, the pillars of wellness, mm-hmm. right? That are now going to not only, we've already got your house clean. Now you're going to keep it clean, right? And what we know is that fibroids go in an 8 to 15 year cycle. So if you have any procedure within 8 years, there were pre-existing fibroids.
Okay.
Now if we get you to 8 to 15 years, then you could have a recurrence, which makes sense because these are now fully treated fibroids. This is now a new generation. So the declaration of a new generation is 8 to 15 years. Mm-hmm. I say this to say, which is so funny, because when I started doing this work in 2021, I had the Bahamas, had two VIP patients that showed up to me. They basically didn't want to hear what I had to say. They said, "When are we going to do the procedure?" I said, "Well, you want to go through it?" They said, No. Let me just let you know. I had an embolization in 2006 at the Cleveland Clinic. And they told me exactly what you just said about 8 to 15 years. Mm-hmm. I just knew when it hit 2020, somewhere around that time, I would start having symptoms. And like they said, it came back. Wow. The other lady had it in 2008, mm-hmm. 2006, 2008. Two separate women who didn't know each other also went to Cleveland Clinic, mm-hmm. the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And the doctor said the exact same thing, embolization. And they said 8 to 15 years. They had the same symptom-free period. That one came in 2021. The second one came in 2022. And so they had heard it. So I say, proof is in the pudding. They said exactly what the doctor said, what you're saying. So whatever else that you got to say to me, don't worry. I just need, they say, I ate 45 now. I say 8 to 15 years, I could be well in the menopause. And these ladies had it obviously in their early 30s. Wow. So here it was now, my colleagues, who I don't know who they were, said the exact same thing to them because it's based on data. It's based mm-hmm. on the literature, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is why, like you said early on in the conversation, they went through the process of validating the procedure.
Exactly.
To make sure that you've done sufficient studies at the accurate level, all yes. those sorts of things, to make sure that you are certain in yes. what you're doing and yes. the results. That's amazing to hear, though. Like, it was that close yeah. to that 15-year
yeah,
time.
Yeah, yeah.
It shows the efficacy of the procedure. And obviously, given everything that you said about some of the other options mm-hmm. and just the nature of how fibroids go, it is something that, should be an option for a lot of women. Are there women where this is not an option for them?
Yeah, so it's only my preference. So it's so funny. My mentor, his name is Richard Slansky Goldberg. He actually validated the studies where we're talking about fibroids all this time, mm-hmm. but we haven't talked about something called adenomyosis, which is almost like a sister to fibroids mm-hmm. because it causes heavy menstrual bleeding. It causes painful periods, but it's not a tumor. It's basically glands in the uterus that grow in areas that they shouldn't grow, mm-hmm. okay? And they cause similar symptoms. And he validated the study, which basically shows that you can use embolization to treat adenomyosis.
Oh, wow.
The only other treatment for adenomyosis is hysterectomy.
Right.
So women who don't have fibroids, who have adenomyosis, they have to get a hysterectomy. There's no myomectomy. There's nothing else. There's no robotic. It's just you get married. You just got to suffer through it mm-hmm. or have all your children and then get your hysterectomy. And this is the only thing that would then provide them. So he's very aggressive. And so there's really not really a woman who's not a candidate in his mind. However, there is a group of patients that I prefer not to treat. And here's why. The women who I prefer not to treat are ones that have pedunculated fibers. The reason being is, again, I work in a very collaborative disposition. I have gynecologists here in the Bahamas, one particular who is very good laparoscopically. Mm-hmm. If I'm going in with my chopsticks, as I use that analogy, mm-hmm. to go and cut out fibroids, what is the easiest one to cut? The one that's sticking out like a stalk, right? Mm-hmm. That'll be a sure win. So I prefer to send those patients to my colleague who does laparoscopic procedures because the patient will have a good result. It's a mm-hmm. quick procedure and you could see it. And we've mm-hmm. already done the MRI to show that is a fibroid that's causing the most issues. What makes that less me left efficacious in that particular setting is because in my attempt to block up the blood supply, there's a certain fraction of patients, depending how narrow the stalk is, that I can block off the stalk first before I block off all the fibroids. And fibroids are like, they're tumors. They will recruit blood. If you don't kill them fully, it's like a cockroach. If you don't kill them fully, you come back to go and sweep them up, and they're gone, right? So if I block off that stalk, but then I don't block off the branches within the fibroid, that fibroid could recruit blood supply from around the uterus to a new uterus.
I got you.
So you have to literally block off the entire stalk and the fibroids. Mm-hmm. So sometimes because you're going single file and blocking off the fibroid, you may end up thinking that you blocked off the entire branches of that.
But it's fibroid. Possible.
But that you block off the stalk and a portion of it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's still living. And if it's still living, then it still has the ability to recruit blood supply from the ovaries or the uterus.
And then that 8 to 15 years goes out the window.
Yeah, and then now you come, it's still there, right? So for me, it makes my colleagues in gynecology look good. It makes my patient feel better because now I pass them on to a surgeon. It's going to be an easier procedure than it would have been if it was intramural or submucosal or subserosal. And for me, it's the one that basically I have the least efficacy on. Everybody else is 95 to 96%, all comers. I will get you straight, but this would be obviously the patients that would have less efficacy. Mm-hmm. So I pass those on. I don't treat those patients.
Yeah,
for the most part.
I got you. At this point, I feel like we definitely have to do a part two of this conversation. But you know, you've spoken about working closely with your patients. What does that ongoing relationship look like from diagnosis through post treatment and then fertility planning? Because obviously, you know, when you talk about fibroids, that fertility part of the conversation becomes a critical part of it, right? And you seem to be someone who walks through the entire journey with it. What does that look like?
Yeah, no, great question. So I just had a patient in my office last week who just gave a testimonial. And when she saw me, you know, this was a woman who would have headaches. She would be just like debilitated because of the pain from her periods, heavy menstrual pain. And when she showed up on my doorstep, her husband happens to be a childhood friend of mine. And I don't know if that's better or worse, right? So, but let's believe it as that. But he comes in and he's very, very just like tense the first time. And this was now what, seven months now, when he came in to see me with his wife. And when they came in, they had already made a decision. Again, they're married now. They made a decision for her to remove her uterus because they... Like you mentioned, there are women they know who've had two myomectomies in like a 3-year period, which is, in my mind, nonsense. It's nonsense, okay? So if this is the case, they said, no, I want a one-and-done situation. I need to be put out of my misery. But at the same time, this particular couple wants children.
Yeah,
so they are trying to navigate this very difficult decision, both as a husband, both as a wife, of how debilitating her symptoms have been, where she has obviously not been in a position to serve her family and her husband and just professionally because of her issue. But then they have this dream of bringing their family from 2 to 3 and 4 to 5. And I had to navigate them where I literally, and I say this, you know, with love, is that I had to talk them off over the lunch. This woman now has gone from what she was, which was a ridiculous amount of pads, again, debilitating, very sorrowful, painful periods, to then after the treatment, where she's now telling me, amazing, it's gone, headaches, quality of life is like through the roof now, energy level, I didn't even know I had this energy, right? But then, because of how they had already sort of been so disappointed just from what they were dealing with and the thought of being able to have children, I had to now talk about the next ledge, which is that, you know what, you still should continue to try to have children, okay? And they then made the decision where they would continue to try. And now we're in this sort of period where now we're waiting. We're waiting for them to let me know that, you know what, because we know that, you know, fibroids can prevent fertility. We also know that UAE can actually restore fertility. You know, there's a recent study in 2018, 2017, I think it was, where about 400 women who couldn't conceive underwent partial or complete uterine embolization. And of that 400, 180 of those women were able to bring their child to term. Okay? So what we know is, and again, we talked about all the mechanisms why that would happen. So again, it restores. We also know that when you think about the intentional pregnancy rate in a study that is probably the most common one that sort of talks about intentional pregnancy rate, all comers uterine adenomyosization, if you look at sort of the women in that particular study, the number was 61%. So 2/3 of the women that tried to get pregnant got pregnant post-embolization, right? And it's and it makes it very clear, because when you come from an environment where you cannot get pregnant, and you remove the blockages and the obstacles to all the eggs passing through, the sperm coming up, the implantation occurring, or the implantation going to now gestation, where now the baby's able to expand in an unimpeded environment, you're like, all right, well, of course this is going to help, right? Of course this is going to help. So now with my patients now, knowing that timeline, knowing those obstacles, I am just present. I'm just walking them through, you know, ensuring that they know that the part that I'm taking care of, which is clearing the runway, so to speak, is done. Right. Now, what they need to do is now ensure that they are doing what normal people who want to procreate do, okay? And that's up to them. I can't walk them through that. But the other piece, too, and I talked about it with men, there are things that cause men to be infertile, which historically has been the most common reasons. And in our society, unfortunately, a lot of men aren't willing to be tested, okay? And so I have to make it very clear without looking at the man in the room and say, bro, what you going to do to show us that everything, all the ducks in a row for you, on your side, right? And I can tell you, I've had conversations, you know, with an elephant in the room, and that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
But I make sure that everything is clear on my end. If my side of the room is clean and your side of the room ain't clean, then you gotta look into that.
Yeah.
So I say this to say, in terms of me, I'm very present. I break it all down. And then again, the husband is not my patient, but the wife is. And then in my conversation with the wife, I make it very clear that we've done what we need to do. This is the only unknown that hasn't been accounted for. And so if you account for that, then I will be, and you will be very happy, obviously, with the result.
There's a whole segment of conversation that I'm going to say we're going to schedule to do second part of this. But as we wrap up, being cognizant of time, you know, a lot of women carry fear of surgery, fear of not being able to conceive, fear of recurrence. So what would you say to a woman who's listening right now who is either scared, frustrated, or unsure of what to do next?
Fear no more. Fear no more. I moved back to the Bahamas in 2023, having initiated my practice here. In 2021, I was practicing in the U.S. and I started coming here a week a month. You know, and my chairman gave me that opportunity to go from 100% to 80%. And I used that week a month to build a practice here in the Bahamas. And I focused it on women with fibroids. And I do many things. I treat, you know, stroke. I treat peripheral vascular disease. I treat tumors, and the liver, and the kidneys. I treat men with enlarged, all these other things.
Because interventional radiology goes well beyond.
All beyond, right? But the reason I chose this particular issue is because of the epidemic.
Yes.
That women suffer in silence, and that more women, often than not, are getting unnecessary invasive surgeries than they need to. Okay, that for me is not. If you, I had a situation where a hotel, who shall remain nameless, referred a patient to me, and I said, "Why?" You say, "A doctor didn't refer you." "No, my employer." I said, "How is it that employer?" They say, come to find out, after digging a little bit, this woman in her department had 3 women out, 2 of which had had myomectomies out now 6 to 12 weeks, and the 3rd one was out with a hysterectomy, and she was now going to be the 4th one out getting a hysterectomy, and her employer happened to know of someone who was another executive who basically said, who knew that she was out for 1 week,
right?
And they basically referred the patient to me because they didn't want 4 people out in the same department, right? That's why. And so I said, oh, this is a good thing. So this means that people understand the value proposition, not just from the fact that it's, you know, you have incision the size of a grain of rice, or that, you know, it restores fertility, or that, you know, 95 to 96% of women are going to be completely resolved if fibroids big, small, and in between. It's the fact that you ain't going to be out for 12 weeks. You will be back to work in a week if you choose to, if you choose to. And so I say to say is that you don't have to fear anymore. I you know, every time, and this is funny to me because my patients, we can laugh about it. I've never had a patient who in the day of first procedure, they said, boy, doc, I'm a little nervous. I've never had a woman who's not said that. But after the procedure, they're just like, doc. Why you didn't tell me? I said, no. I told you it was going to be this way. I told you you were going to get these results. I didn't think it was going to be like this. Woman last week, two weeks ago, she sent me a mess. She lost 3 inches off her waist in 8 weeks.
Right, because I guess bloating would have been one of her issues.
Well, her fibroids are now scarring down, and she's watching the balloon deflate
right
as it scars down. Because right? Yeah. So she's
shrinking.
it was dead to now it's being, but she's doing the things that we encourage to do, like the exercise
right.
and the detox that now allows the body to break down the muscle tissue that's mm-hmm. now dead, right? So she's doing all the things. So she did everything we asked her to do, and now she's seeing 3 inches off her waist, right?
Just like that,
mm-hmm. right? So again, fear no more. We're here to help at the Bahamas Fiber and Intervention Clinic at Family Medicine Center. You know, if you want to reach out to us, you know, my assistant can be reached at 1-242-818-BFIC-2342. Mm-hmm. So 818-2342. You can follow me on Instagram at drdr.michaelhiggins. We also have the Bahamas Fiber and Intervention Clinic on our Facebook page, which you can always log on to. But we put out a lot of content on dr.michaelhiggins on Instagram. There's some videos on YouTube as well. Mm-hmm. But if you want to set up a consultation, have a conversation, then you know we're here to serve you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Higgins, for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us on Vital Voices today. Again, we're going to come back around and have probably a follow-up conversation to this as soon as we can get things arranged. But I think this is great information for our listeners to hear. And I think from my vantage point, I hope that it encourages women to take a second look at some of the options that are available to them and perhaps find ways now to actually be able to preserve their fertility after fibroids.
Amazing.
That was Dr. Michael Higgins of the Bahamas Fibroid and Interventional Clinic, helping us understand the roles of fertility after fibroids. Dr. Higgins, thank you for sharing your time, your expertise, and your passion for helping women reclaim their health and fertility. If today's conversation resonated with you, be sure to share this episode with someone who needs it, and don't forget to follow Vital Voices on YouTube and all podcast platforms. Thank you for joining us each week on Vital Voices for the nation's most vital conversations, where insight meets impact. Until next time, stay informed, stay connected, stay well, and stay tuned for the next Vital Voice. Did you miss a part of today's show? You can catch this episode and all Vital Voices episodes online at youtube.com/@VitalVoices242. See you next week as we sit down with another Vital Voice.
We'd like to thank today's sponsors, Oak Tree Medical Center and King Group of Companies, including Cool Runnings Ice, Color Me Agency, and Retro Games 242.